Hey, everybody. It's here. Our conversation with Kyle Rittenhouse. Pretty amazing conversation. It starts a little chaotic. He has both of his dogs on set, so bear with some of the disjointed conversation. But then we get into it, and we have Jack Posobiec, the great Jack Posobiec from Turning Point USA Human Events with us. We ask him some questions that he has not yet answered in this in-depth conversation. Also with him is Dave Hancock, kind of family spokesperson and advisor to the Rittenhouse family. Great guy. And there's no advertisers in this entire episode. That's right, no advertisers in this entire episode, thanks to you. And if you're inspired by the work that we're doing at the Charlie Kirk Show, two podcasts a day, one on Saturday, one on Sunday, the hardest working podcast team in the country, some people might call us, please consider supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. Sarah from Maryland, thank you for supporting us. Meredith from Dallas, thank you for supporting us. Bruce from Honolulu, thank you for supporting us. Lisa from Washington, Bruce from Alabama, Elton from Indiana, Anthony from New York for your monthly support. And by the way, those of you that become monthly supporters, you guys can come to our monthly Zoom call where you can ask me anything. It's a lot of fun. Cheryl from New Mexico, thank you for your support. Janet from Tennessee, thank you for your support. Larry from Florida, thank you for your support. Alan from Kentucky, Carissa from Missouri, Kathy from California, Mary from Georgia, Finn from Hawaii, Vanessa from California, Jared from Kansas, Elise from Arizona, Anna from Indiana, Alyssa from Texas, JJ from Arkansas, Dylan Vukovic from Ohio. I grew up with someone with that last name. Leanne from California, and Jana from Texas. What do you guys do when you support us at charliekirk.com/support? You help support me, our team, our staff, and our mission to reach millions of young people every single month. So if you want this message to get out, the message of truth, the Constitution, of freedom, of our country, of rights given to us from the Lord, go to charliekirk.com/support to get behind the work we are doing. We are so thankful for that, and so please consider doing that. If you want to come to America Fest, the largest pro-American celebration in the country ever, Tucker Carlson will be there. Kayleigh McEnany will be there. Candace Owens will be there. Rand Paul. So many speakers. Ted Cruz. Go to tpusa.com/AMFEST. Kayleigh McEnany will be there. December 18, 19, 20, and 21 in Phoenix, Arizona. Pick up your tickets today at tpusa.com/AMFEST. We'll see all of you in Phoenix, Arizona at the most beautiful time of year you can imagine in Phoenix, tpusa.com/AMFEST, tpusa.com/AMFEST. The Kyle Rittenhouse interview is here. My conversation with him alongside Jack Posobiec and Dave Hancock. Thank you again for supporting our show, charliekirk.com/support. It allows us to speak freely and pursue topics the corporate media wants us to ignore, but we choose to go into them. So thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, truly buckle up for Kyle Rittenhouse. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. Really important interview here. We're honored to be able to have it. First, we have Jack Posobiec, who's going to be co-piloting this, who earned the, I guess you could say, the right, the ability to have this conversation. But, of course, the main reason we're all here, Kyle Rittenhouse, everybody, is here on the Charlie Kirk Show. Also, with Dave Hancock, family spokesperson, and someone who's really been there for Kyle the last year. And I look forward to talking about that. Kyle, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Thank you so much for having me, Charlie.
Well, Charlie, hold on. I think there's some other people who need some introductions.
Oh, you're right. So we have Bailey and Milo. Kyle, who is... Tell us who Milo is.
So Milo is my dog. I got him in January to help with everything that's going on, somebody I can help train, man's best friend.
Milo's a great dog. So throughout the last year, you've obviously been through a lot. Talk just like, first, let's talk about you as a human being.
Talk about how Milo's helped you through that.
Well, Milo's a smart dog. He knows when I'm having down days. He'll like come up to me and, hey, pet me. And then he has his best friend, Bailey, who they just wrestle around. Bailey pretty much raised Milo, and they like to wrestle around and tussle.
So, Kyle, I want to kind of take a step back here. And first, you and I both have something in common. We both grew up in the Chicagoland area.
Yep.
So first, Cubs or Sox?
I'm a Cubs fan.
Cubs fan, good answer. So we also cheer for the Sox at times, though. Kyle, from the first moment I saw, you know, you in the news and the video of you defending yourself, you know, I felt like we had something in common. We both grew up in the same neighborhood, you know, kind of a shared story. And you always just wanted to try to help people, right?
That is correct. While growing up, my mom was a single mother working as a CNA at a nursing home helping old people, and inspired me to start helping people, wanting to go to nursing school, becoming a lifeguard, becoming a firefighter, EMT cadet, and a police explorer.
You grew up in Antioch?
I did. I grew up in Antioch, Illinois. I lived in Lakeville for a couple years. I actually moved around a lot, but the last place I was living was Antioch, Illinois.
Growing up, what did you want to be when you got older?
Growing up, I wanted to be a police officer to be able to help people and help people when they're having bad days, because cops see people on their worst days.
Jack?
So they made this whole, you know, big, like, deal during the trial in Binger, and I call him Lunchbox, his sidekick there, because he brought him along like a boxed lunch. They said, oh, well, you're not even from Kenosha, you know, you don't even live in Kenosha, you cross state lines, all this business. But it seemed to me when I was, you know, hearing you speak about it, and then when you took the stand, you talked more about it, that it seemed like Kenosha did mean something to you.
It did.
You had a lot of connections. So what does Kenosha mean to you?
Well, Kenosha, my best friend Dominic lives there. My dad lives there. My entire family pretty much lives there. I go grocery shopping in Kenosha, and of course, they have the best cheese curds in the world, as we all know.
Can confirm. Yeah, I've been there a couple of times since all this. I was there, I guess, 2 weeks after that happened. So I was there like mid-September of last year, and then I've gone back a few times just to see it. And it's actually a really nice town. Like, yeah, I really liked it. I enjoyed it. I went there with my brother. We had a great time.
Oh, yeah. It's down-to-earth people who is just people that are just like wanting to be, it's the Midwest. We call it Midwest friendly. We wave to people driving down the road.
Did you ever, I mean, obviously the answer is no, but talk to us what it was like though, going from the mindset of, I want to help people on that night. That's your intent.
And you've got this great place, this town, this great
yes,
town.
Yes. And you see the town starting to fall apart. And the next thing you know, your entire life gets put in jeopardy because you defend yourself and you have to be called a murderer, a white supremacist, all of this. Talk about how you dealt with that. How did you just, that's probably the most immediate reversal a human being could go through.
How I dealt with that was I would block out social media. I wouldn't go on my phone. I would just not pay attention to any of that and just focus on what's in front of me.
And so, Dave, I want to bring you into the conversation. So, Dave, you've kind of been, in some ways, like a mentor father figure to Kyle. And kind of been the family spokesperson, and you kind of got thrown into this entire thing. Talk about who Kyle is as a person, because this is not just a ordinary 18-year-old.
No, absolutely not. I first met Kyle on the 20th of November when I picked him up, and we spent about 3 hours driving down to the safe house. I really got to know him at that moment. He's a civic-hearted, he cares about people, he's empathetic, and he just really has a great head on his shoulders. I mean, he wants to do great things as he gets older, and I've just learned that he's not vitriolic, he's not this political kid, he basically loves everybody. So that's the Kyle that I got to know.
I mean, and it's amazing sitting here, Kyle, because you put anybody else through that situation. You put me through that situation when I was 18 and everything else that happened afterwards. I would have a huge attitude and a chip on my shoulder and everything else. But you seem like you're pretty, you know, pretty well adjusted and actually dealing with it quite well. You're positive. you're outgoing, you're friendly. What do you think it is that people get, you know, wrong about sort of, there's like, there's the image that they try to make of Kyle Rittenhouse, and then there's the real Kyle Rittenhouse. So what do they get wrong the most?
Well, what I would say is people want to push their own agendas and they don't want to look at the facts of what happened, or they just don't want to get to know me as a person or just as a human.
And so, but how do you stay magnanimous? I mean, you don't seem as if you're bitter. I mean, you spent 87 days in jail. Like, I would be pretty upset about that. Not to mention having to go in front of the state of Wisconsin and be like, oh yeah, by the way, if we are able to persuade 12 people, you're going to spend the rest of your life in a prison cell.
To be honest, it does make me upset. I'm just like, there's nothing, it's out of my control. And the only thing I can do is stay humble and look at the positive in life.
And you want to now build a life. Some people aren't allowing you to do that, right? They're saying that, you know, they want the Department of Justice probe or whatever to continue, you know, forward with this. You know, as you were going through this, let's talk just kind of about the specifics of it. You know, you're able to get out of jail, 87 days you were there, and then all of a sudden you have to start meeting with lawyers and your legal team and starting to mount a defense. And then the trial went underway. Talk about what that was like. You know, talk about the details and the specifics of, you have to go every single day and you're not allowed to say anything until you took the stand, which I want to ask you about. You know, how much were you sleeping at those nights? Like, how are you dealing with that? You're an innocent person. In some ways, the process was the punishment.
Yeah, like, we see you on screen, but what's it like behind the scenes and all that?
Well, how it is behind the scenes, I have my amazing team, Mark, Corey, Natalie, Joel, LT, Dave, helping me through this and guiding me, because believe it or not, I'm freaking out behind the scenes because you don't know what's going to happen. So to have them to support me, helping me through this and explaining, helped me stay calm. And what I'm thinking when I'm just the blank face potted plant in court, I'm just saying in my head, is this guy serious? Referring to Lunchbox and Binger, also known as Little Finger.
Yes.
And there's one thing that I noticed about him. He's very level-headed.
Totally.
Absolutely level-headed. So, yeah.
Would explain how you were able to effectively defend yourself under imminent, you know, threat of death. I mean, it was calm, cool, and collected all the way through. So talk, at what point in the trial were you all of a sudden like, okay, this is now going in a good, like a direction that is somewhat favorable? Was there a turning point in the midst of the trial?
There's two, actually, for when I knew the state didn't have a case, is when they had their opening statements and when they put Dominic Black on the stand, which really helped me. That's when I knew that they didn't have a case.
So the opening statements you already knew?
Yeah, because he said, I chased down Mr. Rosenbaum, which is not true.
Yeah, and so, Jack, you were covering the trial, you know, very extensively, yeah, and you deserve a lot of credit for that. Go ahead.
This question with Dominic Black and being put on, obviously there's still charges on Dominic regarding this. They're calling it a straw purchase, but it didn't sound to me like you had purchased it, or he purchased it for you. He purchased it and then held on to it. That's not a straw purchase, obviously.
Until he was 18 years old.
Right, until he's 18, right. And so what I couldn't, and I'm still to this point trying to figure out, what exactly was their strategy for putting Dominic on the stand, because his story completely lined up with your story.
Mm-hmm. This is just speculation, but I think they called Dominic to the stand hoping that he would lie, but Dominic was under oath and he told the truth.
Yeah, I'm watching it and I'm trying to be, you know, look, you know, I remember watching it that night. And I remember seeing, and like, I didn't know the name of Kyle Rittenhouse or Gage or Rosenbaum, any, I had no idea who any of you were, but I just knew that, you know, the guys that I would work with, like Richie McGinnis and Elijah Schaefer, Drew Hernandez, Julio Rosas, they were all there, and then BG on the scene as well. And I'm watching these videos come out and I'm looking at this situation going, hey, wait a minute, they're chasing this guy, but the media is saying it the other way. And that's not what happened. And I can see these videos and you guys are lying about this. And then so you would have to think that okay, if I'm an adversarial prosecutor, I'm going to bring witnesses forward that are going to, you know, help my theory of the case. And to your point, in his opening statement, that's what he says. He says they were chasing you, or excuse me, that you were chasing them. But then the very next thing he does is bring on a witness that supports your side of the case.
Exactly. And
all their witnesses.
Well, yes, actually, that turned out to be a trend that we saw throughout the rest of the trial. Every single one of them, they were the ones who called Richie. You guys didn't even have to call Richie.
Mm-mm. During his opening, when he said that, one of the things I was thinking, I was like, geez, I didn't know that he watched the videos backwards.
there was a meme of that where it was Binger, and he goes, well, all you have to do is play the video in reverse, and you can clearly see Kyle chasing them. Which is basically, I mean, for the amount of hocus pocus, right,
hocus that they did on these out of focus.
Hocus pocus out of focus that they did on these videos, it almost got to the point where they had to play the videos backwards because you couldn't find anything else on these things. But, you know, one thing with that, with these videos and just, you know, being able to support Free Kyle USA and all the other stuff, did you have a sense, you know, both during the trial and beforehand, that yes, obviously there was an entire mainstream media and political, really, establishment that was hell-bent on making you the scapegoat for everything that happened in Kenosha and really a lot of 2020. But did you also realize that there were millions of people that had your back, that were supporting you, going through these videos, donating? Mm-hmm.
And thank you so much to the people who do support me and have donated. It means a lot to me and my family, helping us pay for these legal bills. It just means so much to me, and we couldn't have done it without them. And it's just amazing. And with the whole people who didn't support me, I actually didn't know how much support I really had until I got bailed out. I didn't know how much of the world supported the right to self-defense.
So you wake up, and maybe the day before, or the day, you know, day before that, your defense counsel says, Kyle, you're going to take the stand. Talk about what went into that, because that's a big deal, Kyle.
Yep.
You waived your Fifth Amendment rights. Talk about that.
Well, so I met Mark in mid-September, about 3 weeks after the incident. And
your lawyer?
My lawyer. Yeah. And he is a straight-up guy. He is amazing. The first thing he told me was, look, you got to take the stand. And I said, I agree. I want to tell my story. And we, ever since I got bailed out, we were preparing.
So that was there from the start. That wasn't like a game time decision.
No, it was something we prepared for over a year. Corey, my other attorney, would help prepare me, and he would cross-examine me and help me help not fall into the loopholes that Attorney Binger would have me try to fall.
That's right, because they mentioned you guys did a couple of mock trials.
Yep.
So in those, it was actually Corey playing, I guess, Binger, basically. Yay. Well, the bad guy, right. Real quick, who was better, Binger or Corey, at the prosecuting?
Corey is an amazing attorney and a way better prosecutor than that entire office of Kenosha.
I mean, some of the questions he's asking you, like, do hollow point rounds explode, right? No. did you play Call of Duty too much, Kyle?
Like, look, I play Call of Duty. I didn't lie. I play COD.
It's a video game.
So, but Kyle, walk us through this. So you wake up, and you know this is the day you're going to take the stand. And more than just the stand, you know this is a nationally publicized televised trial, right? What's going through your mind? That's like the biggest moment of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I was like, whew, I was sweating. And as you guys seen, I was white as a ghost when I took the stand. I was like, I couldn't eat. And thank God I had the people around me who were able to talk to me and calm me down.
First time I saw him silent.
Beforehand?
In about a year.
But beforehand?
Yeah.
Did you have cold feet? Like, maybe I don't want to do this? Because, Kyle, to be honest, I'll tell you, you can go back to the Charlie Kirk Show archives. In our JV analysis, I thought it was a mistake. I was like, the trial's going so well. This is unusual. I remember you came on our show, and I asked you, and I said, I'm going to yield to the wisdom of the defense. But
people were worried. People were very
worried. You and I were texting, like, what is going on here?
Because it you know, it's one of those situations where it's a risk. You know, it's a gamble, right? It's such a gamble to see, can this guy, and fortunately for you, the guy was an idiot.
That's a nice term.
Yeah, it's coming. No, I mean, really, that there's so much. Look, I was at, you know, Guantanamo Bay for a year. You know, there's way more that he could have done that, you know, he didn't even try to, because he's talking about video games and doesn't even know the basics of ammunition. But, you know, what did you think? Yeah, just sort of even in your mind, right? Because as you get up there, Judge Schrader is saying, hey, you still have, it is still your decision, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it seemed like he gave you all the space that you needed to be able to say, look, right up until this moment, it's my choice that I do this.
My reasoning behind taking the stand is I wanted the world to know who the real Kyle Rittenhouse was.
And obviously, you know, it was compelling to millions and millions of people, because the more you talked, the more people are like, this is a normal kid who, you know, got caught into something that you didn't even want to get caught into and obviously defended yourself. And so you get up there, and then Binger starts to then go after your Fifth Amendment rights. Talk about that.
So I was on the stand, and Binger starts commenting on my post-arrest silent, and I was like, what the f***? I was like, what is, like, this is basic middle school constitution test stuff. I know this stuff. You don't comment on a defendant's post-arrest silence.
So yes, every TV show, movie, you know, you have the right to remain. It's the first thing they say.
Yeah, it's the right against self-incrimination. So what's going through your mind at that point? I mean,
I'm like, did he really just go there? And I was astonished. I was in shock. I don't know about you, how you were when you heard that. I was like,
I was pretty verbal in the gallery. I was like, oh, come on. Like, because it was just appalling.
And then the judge stepped up, who, by the way, the judge is being wrongly attacked as being on your side. He was on the side of the Constitution.
Exactly. Yeah, he is a Constitution.
Not your side. Definitely not Binger's side, because Binger is a crazy person.
Because, by the way, this judge is known for, if the jury comes back with a verdict of guilty, he's known for being a harsh, by-the-book sentencer.
So, yeah. So talk about this. So then the judge intervenes and issues one of the most harsh condemnation. What was going through your head at that point?
It took a lot to hold back. I wanted to break out in laughter because I was like, shouldn't have gone there.
Do you think, though, Kyle, that the prosecution was trying to throw the trial or the case?
It's my belief, and I'm probably right now, because we did win the case, that he knew it wasn't going so good for them, so he wanted a mistrial. That's why we filed a motion for a mistrial with prejudice.
I mean, they completely had it wrong. The third set of facts they were on in the middle of trial, they just kept changing their fact pattern,
saying
what he did
and didn't do. Were there any points in the trial where you thought that Judge Schrader was going to make that ruling and would declare a mistrial? Were there any specific points where you think that it got to that sort of critical mass?
A lot of people's beliefs are different from mine, even on my team. I didn't think he was ever going to leave this out of the hands of the jury. I don't think he wanted to be that guy that took it out of the hands of the jury. So I didn't think he would grant that until the jury made a ruling.
It seemed to me in jury selection, and he gave that big speech about, you know, where juries come from, where the law comes from. It seems to me that he really did respect the jury tradition. And so I'm with you, basically. I had the same read on him that he really, you know, he would have if he had to, but unless it really crossed the line, he wanted this to be a jury decision. And, you know, it, obviously, thank God, it turned out to be the right
one. And Binger did everything he could. So let's just show 34 on the screen. So, Kyle, you're sitting there. It's closing arguments, right? You're like, what's the side? What's going on? You know, how's the jury trending? And then next thing you know, let's put cut 34 on the screen, guys. You have attorney Binger pick up an AR-15.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And so, just decide you have better trigger posture than him, Kyle.
Kyle, what is he pointing at?
Is he threatening the jury?
Pretty much. He was pointing his gun at the gallery, and I looked at my attorney.
This is your gun, right?
That's my rifle.
Yeah, that is yours, right?
That we're having destroyed right now. We don't want anything to do with that.
Oh wow.
So I looked at Corey and I said, Corey, that's gun safety 101. Loaded or unloaded, treat a gun like it's loaded.
Yeah.
And he points it at the jury.
Exactly.
I think at that point I said, all right, they're freaking out. I mean, they got nothing left.
So there's this video that the FBI had in their archives 14 months. It clearly shows you being chased down by this deranged individual, corners you, all of it, HD. You know, this isn't, you know, behind the cars because, and this was always key that you know, people who are looking at this never got, is that all the camera footage from that night was surface level, right? Because it's handheld. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, Richie thinks he has his camera going, but he doesn't. And he's beating himself up over that, but, you know, it happens in the heat of the moment, that this thing is above, looking down, sees the whole thing. You can actually see the anger and just, you know, insanity in Rosenbaum's face as he's chasing you, that I don't think you show that face to anybody, that they would think that this guy,
and let alone threatening to kill them twice that night.
Right, right, that he has anything other than, you know, very dangerous, evil intentions. And they sat on this thing for 14 months, didn't give it to you guys. The prosecution had it. Why didn't the FBI release this the next day?
That's the question.
That's the question. I'll let Dave explain the FOIA.
And then not only that, yeah.
Milo's very upset with the FBI right now. Very upset.
They had a high definition version that they admitted they had, but destroyed. And they said that in the same sentence as admitting that they knew what they had that night. So, I mean, you got to wonder what was going on there. So we filed FOIA requests for that footage. And it was
for the HD footage,
for any of the footage. And they said no records. And then his attorneys filed the appeals and no records. And they still haven't met their duties as a federal agency under FOIA still to this day. So
now, Kyle, you had your cell phone on you that night, right?
I did.
So my take on this is most likely the reason that they didn't want this getting out is they probably had these types of surveillance flights going on over all the riots of 2020. And they probably had an optics package and a signals package on there where they were able to track all the cell phones of everyone in that. So it's not necessarily that they were like looking at you, but they were probably tracking every single thing that we went on.
So help me understand this though. The FBI had potentially exculpatory information that was given to the prosecution. And that footage has been deleted or missing. I'm not quite understanding that whole part of it.
So they had the standard definition, which gets fed to the ground. And then they had the high definition, which gets taken on the aircraft itself. They admitted on the stand that the standard definition that went to the ground, that's what was turned over to the prosecution long after the incident itself. The high definition version on the aircraft itself, they claimed, was destroyed. And that is the one that you can zoom into and you can see every single thing that happened on the ground. And we have been unable to receive that or get that from the FBI since.
Because the other thing is, you know, and I think it's kind of obvious, the only thing that was released was, what, 1:39 of the encounter?
And so
I'm sure this whole canard about you raising your rifle as opposed to raising your shoulder, and somehow you can magically switch arms.
Yeah, with the one point, apparently I'm left-handed, according
yeah,
to this.
Yeah, and holding the rifle left, right. But so this whole canard about that, which they hung the entire closing argument on, which, by the way, wasn't mentioned, of course, in the opening, all of that most likely was captured on this footage, and certainly would have been able to see that in very clear. You wouldn't, like, you know, this whole joke about, oh, we fortified, enhanced the image for 20 hours. So you wouldn't need to if you had the HD.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's 100%
and
right.
It's just
and they narrated the wrong story.
Yes.
They actually came out in court and said, this shows that he chased down Rosenbaum and that he yelled at Rosenbaum from across the car. Remember that? And I looked at the video with some other people. I'm like, what?
It shows the complete opposite.
It's not even possible. So then they changed their facts again.
Cut 21. I want to get your reaction to this. Binger says, listen, if you're the one who brings the gun, you lose your right to self-defense. And then I want to get into this, Kyle, because you have become famous, and I don't think you wanted to be famous, but you just are, because this idea of self-defense is so personal to so many people. Standing up against a bully in a hallway, right? Standing up for people, standing up for yourself. But according to the prosecution in Cut 21, listen, you lose your right to self-defense if you're the one who brings the gun. Play Cut 21.
You lose the right to self-defense when you're the one who brought the gun, when you're the one creating the danger, when you're the one provoking other people.
Is that what the law says?
No. No, and I'm no lawyer, and I'm just like a normal 17, 18 year old kid. Look, how I look at it, what he's saying, no one has a right to defend themselves in the world, in the United States, if they're the one that brings the gun. So that means what he's saying is nobody's allowed to carry a gun, essentially. That's what I get out of it. I don't know about you guys, but.
So that's exactly what he's conflating. So what he's doing legally is conflating you possessing a weapon as opposed to along with you brandishing and then provoking that weapon. So brandishing it at a person or provoking an attack or an assault. That's obviously not what happened. You were lawfully open carrying the same way that anyone who's legally able to can do so in Wisconsin, can do so in Arizona, so many states. That is not the legal standard of the United States. Obviously, our legal standard is the Second Amendment.
And lawfully is the key word. That was a weapon he knew that he could legally carry. And that's why he had...
As was proven at trial.
Right.
And you know the law better than the prosecution. And the judge dismissed that charge. Kyle, what point did you realize that this was more than just about your future? Or maybe that was always your focus and you didn't care about the rest. And like, oh, I'm now kind of a figurehead for multiple different movements, over prosecution, self-defense. When did that kind of set in?
Well, when I first realized it was probably in December of 2020 when I realized, okay, this is getting pretty big. All these media personalities are talking about it and all the people who don't agree with me or agree with the right to self-defense are making up these things such as Anna Kasparian, the Young Turks, who's making it.
I have that clip.
Really?
Oh. So can I play it?
Yeah, sure.
So Anna Kasparian, now that's an Armenian name. So what she's doing on the Young Turks, I have no idea. Now, you might not know the Turkish-Armenian
history. The Young
Turks
were the ones who killed the Armenians.
Genocide, but we're not going to get into that. Anyway, I'm not a fan of hers. But I will say, though, she came out and I don't know if you saw what she did.
She admitted she was wrong.
We have that clip. So Anna Kasparian.
And I give her all the credit in the world for
cut
that.
Cut 7. You know the name's Armenian if it ever ends in IAN, which means son of.
They call it a lucid moment.
Yes. So then she comes out of nowhere and she says, I was wrong. So I want to play cut 7, Anna Kasparian, who lied about you, but then had the courage to clarify the record on air. Play cut 7.
So look, these details matter because if you're going to make an argument that you acted in self-defense, there needs to be some proof that there was an imminent threat. Now, what really mattered to me was how all of this unfolded. What was the thing that sparked it? What started all of it? And initially, I was under the assumption that Rittenhouse was the person who was chasing after Joseph Rosenbaum, that's how it had started. But I was wrong about that. Okay, so I want to correct the record. I was, in fact, wrong about that.
She was wrong about it.
She's wrong about a lot of things.
And she wasn't alone. And so it must have been so frustrating because, Kyle, you knew this. And you were going through social media. It was unavoidable. You were on trial in two different courts.
The court of public opinion, which, thank God, I had people around me helping defend my character, such as my attorneys, Mr. Dave.
Jack did a great job.
Jack, thank you so much.
Oh, tons of them all over the Twitter side.
Everywhere. I may have been one of the loudest voices or louder voices out there, but there were so many people. And I wish maybe, someday if I get a chance, I could show you. So many people are emailing me and messaging me. Can you get a message to Kyle? Tell him we're praying for him. I had a son, was in a similar thing. And like all these different stories and just complete outpouring of support because I think a lot of people looked at it as a situation of, and you know, I said this too, they, you know, people were saying, oh, should he shouldn't have been there, right? But the actual answer is that none of them should have been there. None of the rioters should have been there. The mob shouldn't have been there, right? We should have safety in our communities. This great little town of Kenosha that it was so nice to be able to go visit should never have to experience that, and nobody should, because our government should be the one that's actually protecting people.
And so you had these two courts, and obviously you were most focused about, I don't know, like I'll win the court of public opinion later.
Yep.
Were you ever worried, though? Did you ever have the paranoia thought, like, man, is this jury really not watching the news? Is this, you know what I'm talking about?
Look, it's unavoidable, this case. They definitely probably saw some of this stuff. Some of them probably watched it. I hope some of them probably turned it off, but I guarantee one or two of them definitely were watching the news during
every
the trial.
Every single jury person said that they had consumed media at the beginning of this. So it's impossible not to.
And it was the fear that we had, Kyle, is that there was this fear of jury intimidation, which we have some tape to play on.
I think it's MSNBC.
That's right. Not a fan.
Neither am I.
Good. We have that in common. And we have the cut here. We get cut 29 queued up of the judge announcing that MSNBC is banned from the courtroom. Now, for following jurors, and that's where Jack and I were interfacing, like, wait a second, this is now heading into really dangerous territory, that a young man's life might be put in jeopardy if one of these juries feels even slightly intimidated. Let's play cut 29.
A person who identified himself as James G. Morrison and who claimed that he was a producer with NBC News. The police, when they stopped him because he was following in a distance of about a block and went through a red light, pulled him over and inquired of him what was going on, and he gave that information and stated that he had been instructed by Ms. Bion in New York to follow the jury bus. He's not here today from what I'm told, and I have instructed that no one from MSNBC News will be permitted in this building for the duration of this trial.
And so there was this fear that, is the jury going to be intimidated?
That, when I heard about that, I was like, I put my head down. We went into the judge chambers. I'm like, I said, why can't people just do honest journalism these days?
Yes.
It's just so unprofessional for the person who did that to do that. It's like, who in their right mind would do that?
What was your impression of, I guess, the media before all of this started and then now?
Well, I don't watch the news. I never have.
That's why you're so happy.
Yeah, right? I don't pay... Yeah, sounds bad. I don't pay attention to what's going on in the world before this and right now. I focus on myself and I focus on work.
Just to follow up on that real quick. So, but you had a sense of, you know, there's this media out there. They report things. You know, did you have, you know, just kind of glance at a headline and then
our best friend Twitter,
you know, glance at Twitter and then move on to the next thing. Right. So how do you feel about him now?
I think a lot of people are trying to save their assets right now. What it seems like, you see a lot of different headlines come out.
So you're speaking in terms of the defamation potential claims that, that might come out.
I see headlines, people are just changing up their stories. Which one was it? I think CNN.
I mean, it was, come on. Everybody has Google, right? He didn't cross state lines with a gun. I mean, that was still being reported. That's still being reported now. People still believe that. And that's one of the problems with the media, was they just perpetuated this absolutely, completely false narrative, and they kept it going. Even after trial, when all the truth came out, they still kept it going. And I think that's probably the worst part about it.
Well, it's crossing state lines. It's like Illinois to Wisconsin. You do that every day. It's like ridiculous.
Wisconsin.
You don't even realize you crossed. Seriously.
My backyard was in Wisconsin. So
you cross Half Day Road and you're there.
Exactly.
You're in there. did it probably 300 times in my life.
And there's nothing on the ground. There's no towers. There's nothing to say. Oh, my gosh, you're crossing state lines.
But do you know what? This goes to show that this is a very important point. The Northeast bias of the news media, because when you cross from New York to New Jersey, you go through a tunnel or you go through a bridge or go over a bridge, right? You really can't go from New York to New Jersey. I'm trying to think, at least in Manhattan. Yeah, unless going through a tunnel or a bridge. Like in the Midwest, you're going to Wisconsin. You're like, wait, I just crossed state lines. Like you don't even know. Yeah. But who cares? What's the big difference?
He crossed state lines.
That's right. That they keep on repeating that. I think the reason they're trying to do that is for future gun laws, and also they're trying to provoke a federal, you know, probe. And so, what do you think about that? I mean,
can I just
please?
The chairman of the House,
Jerry Nadler. Yeah.
I mean, come on, you're the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. And you literally tweet that he crossed state lines, and so now there's some sort of federal jurisdiction. Come on, you're the chairman, you're a congressman, and you can't get that right. So I think what you're asking is about the federal probe.
Well, we have a cut I want to play, but I guess I want both your thoughts. Why are they so obsessed with you?
They're coming after our guns. They want to come after Americans' guns, people's rights to bear arms. That's my opinion. I don't know about you guys, but...
Well, we agree with that totally. And that the fact...
It does seem like it's something else to this, to just keep drilling down and changing the narrative
that
they're using.
I want to pick up on what you're saying there. So do you believe that, you know, and there is this narrative that... You know, you always hear it, like good guy with a gun, right? Good guy with a gun is able to stop a mass shooter, is able to stop a riot situation, obviously, and is able to defend themselves from the riot, you know, attacking them. So do you believe it's a situation where they want only the government to have that kind of monopoly on violence, to be able to use guns so that it essentially eviscerates the Second Amendment?
Well, I think that's getting into the weeds on the issue. Besides the fact that I believe from the very start that it has always been about the gun and wasn't about the right of self-defense, which it became about because that's what it was about, period.
And Binger even mentions this at the trial. He said, why did you choose the AR? Why did you choose the AR?
Yeah. Because it's and I was like, and then he tried correcting me on the law. I'm like, because that was the only gun that I was legally allowed to have. And he was like, actually, no, this is what the law says. I'm like, no, that's only, like, you're reading it wrong, man.
Let's play cut 33 before we do. I think it's deeper than that. I think you won and they lost and they don't process that well. Play cut 33.
I know there's no double jeopardy in this country, Paul, but is it possible for this case to go federal? Could a federal prosecutor pick this up?
It's possible, but typically we see those in civil rights cases, and this isn't a civil rights case.
They see that in a civil rights case, and this isn't a civil rights case. Yeah, no kidding. But it's this simple. It's that they had a narrative. They were willing to try to put an innocent person in jail, destroy your life, and smear your character, similar to Nicholas Sandman, not as extreme. You talked to him, didn't you?
I did.
How was that?
He's a nice guy. We talked for like 5 minutes. He asked how I was doing, and I said I was doing good, been praying. And I asked him how he deals with all this media stuff, and he says the same thing as me. Just ignore it.
Just ignore it. That's good advice. So there's two things I want to make sure we touch on. Number one, your future. So you're a student at Arizona State University, regardless of the smear campaign against you. Is that right?
That is correct.
So our office is very pro-ASU. Not U of A, is what I'm told. I'm still learning the Arizona terrain around here. What do you want to do with your life?
I was looking at nursing school about 2 weeks ago. I'll probably change it up another couple dozen times before I actually decide after my undergrad. But right now I'm looking at law school, getting into criminal justice.
And maybe go to school on campus? They're trying to kick you off school.
Yeah, apparently there's a protest plan today or something.
They're saying that we don't want Kyle on campus and all of this. Look, I've been protested differently than you. Just persevere. It's fine. They'll run out of energy. They got nothing better to do.
What they're trying to do is they've set up a situation where they couldn't get you through the legal system. So now they're trying to make it so that you're canceled, right? So there, you're going to be canceled from any other pressure point that they can find, whether that be campus or, you know, let's say you start a social media account and, you know, make it go public, or they go and just get a new turnover at Twitter. It's the CEO today. The new CEO is like a pro censorship guy, right? They're going to come out and say everything they can to shut you down and to shut you up, because they, to your point, I don't think they want anyone to be able to successfully defend themselves under the Second Amendment, use that at, in a situation to positively express their, I guess, right to live and also their right to self-defense. So any your existence is a problem for them.
Yeah. And look, I don't really care that they're protesting. I think it's actually very silly and funny.
It's hilarious.
I agree with everybody's right to demonstrate, no matter how silly it is.
But this is part of that whole media thing, right? From the very beginning, there's just so many people who are so completely misinformed. Yeah. And as they get informed on just the basics, I think people start to recognize that this was purely self-defense, and politics is just, it's just not involved in this case at all, period. But I mean, to your point, there are people who want to use this one way or the other. And that's just not what it's about. It's about this young man who defended himself, period, full stop.
So, Kyle, you've learned a lot. What lessons do you have for a young person that's in Antioch High School right now, who is a senior in high school?
Go to college, get a degree, spend time with your family, enjoy life, because you never know what can happen the next day.
That's a lot of wisdom. I want to close by having a conversation, and Dave, you and I chatted about this, about a certain injustice that was done to Kyle. And so, Kyle, you could start, or Dave, you can, you know, and Jack, you guys can talk about this. Kyle, you were in jail for too long.
That is correct.
Why were you in jail for 87 days?
So, when I got arrested, John Pierce and Lynn Wood started raising funds without my family's permission. And then they went on to fight an extradition fight using a novel argument saying I was in a militia. John Pierce can get paid, Wood can get paid, and grow his business and profit, apparently. And while doing that, I said, I don't want to fight extradition. I did nothing wrong. I want to go litigate this in Wisconsin because I didn't do a single thing wrong. They didn't respect my beliefs, and they kept on doing that. And then finally, we lose that extradition battle. I get shipped off to Wisconsin. John Pierce had no idea until I called him that I was in Wisconsin.
That's your lawyer?
That is my lawyer.
That's the one who just sat in court
and argued some sort of bizarre 1780s argument.
That he's in an unorganized militia. And he lost.
And you're not in an organized militia, right?
Look, I don't even know what a militia was.
Good answer. Yeah.
And then Lynn Wood is going on with all this like QAnon stuff, Q Lynn. And he's just off his rails, completely insane. He needs to get on meds or something.
And he's trying to claw back money raised for him. So if I could put some more color on this when you're
explain
ready.
Explain this to the audience. Because
I honestly don't even know what the status of the money is.
Well, and we'll get to that. But yeah, I want you to walk through all this. Because you're a young boy, in literally a boy by the law, in jail. And your lawyers don't even know what state you're in.
No, it's ridiculous. So I'm in Wisconsin, and I have to stay there an extra 20 days because Lynn Wood and John Pierce have to scramble to raise money. When they had it, they had enough prior, but they wasted it on extradition instead of looking out for my best interest. And then November 20th, I finally get bailed out, and Lynn Wood and John Pierce like to think they're the heroes in this case. They're just a bunch of fraud men.
So when this happened on the 25th, I was actually with Lynn Wood. I don't like to admit that. But so they started to bring money into the Fight Back Foundation semi-informally. There was about two or three other fundraising entities. One was the Give, Send, Go fundraiser, which raised $585,000.
Where did that money go?
Wendy approved that money to be sent to Fightback, thinking that they would be good stewards. By September 8th, Fightback knew that there was a $2 million bail. The second he got extradited, that bail would have been set. They knew. Lynn said, the focus needs to be on fighting extradition. By this time, they had raised $1.2 million, right? They could have raised that next eight. They were a hindrance. Once they got involved, they kept him in jail. And I'd say for safety, but because John was charging $1,275 an hour, so he was looking for financial capital.
I don't want to blow past that. They said we want to keep him in jail for his safety. What do they mean by that?
They seem to believe this was their argument on the outside. Now it's their argument. We wanted him to stay safe, right? Because Lynn was getting tons of political capital, right? Because now you start talking about the election coming up, and he was just, all he cared about, and I saw him, and all he cared about was his Twitter followers skyrocketing, right? And John was billing at $12.75 an hour, so it was in his best financial interest. So they kept him in jail.
The guy that's in $70 million debt.
Yeah. So your lawyers were profiting off of your suffering.
That is correct. Yeah.
And they like to say that it was for his safety. They could have, and they knew on the 8th, they could have raised that to, they spent $800 grand to $1 million fighting extradition and lost in 30 seconds.
And what I find extremely disturbing is how Lynn Wood is out here saying I'm being handled like I'm a dog. He doesn't realize how insulting that is to me. I'm 18.
You're a grown man.
Yeah, I make my own decisions. It really ticks me off. I have this insane lunatic saying I'm being handled and that I'm like...
Deep state.
Yeah, deep state. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this person?
CIA, deep state, all this
because I know
crap.
Lynn, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Lynn also represent Nick Sandman?
Until he was fired by death.
Briefly.
And so he was fired as well.
Kyle, you are in the most vulnerable position a human being can be in. I mean, not most, but it's there, right? It's top five.
And then to have these attorneys come in and try to take advantage.
Yeah, so then you have these vultures come in while you're in jail without running water. Is that correct? The sheriff says that's not true, but... I believe you.
Look, I didn't have running water. Okay. I didn't tell anybody about it because I'm not a complainer. Maybe I should have said something, but I didn't have running water.
You're never going to be in that situation again. You should have said something. That's a different topic.
That's the headline for this, by the way.
And they kept him in jail for 20
days. I'm not a complainer.
What? They had to re-raise
that
money.
And so then they had to re-raise the money while you're suffering in jail.
And just to jump ahead, what's really disturbing is that this idiot cannot provide an accounting when me or my mom asked for him. And when he does, it's on
money?
Like a Google spreadsheet. Yeah. Correct.
He denied for over a year to have an independent third-party audit conducted of Fightback Foundation, which was requested by Wendy on multiple occasions. He didn't even provide an accounting, like what was brought in and what was spent until last month, and it's completely inaccurate. So he absolutely, and he would not link to freecowusa.org, which is Wendy's fundraiser to raise money for him. Now, you got to remember, Wendy started that fundraiser, she had $0.
We had to raise
$0.
I want also the audience to know the financial status of the Rittenhouse family. You dropped out of school to support your mom, is that correct?
I did. I was working three jobs. I was working at the YMCA Recplex, and I was doing some landscaping gigs off the side.
So that's the net worth of the Rittenhouse family. And then, and I'm not saying that diminishingly, I'm just offering context, that then the only opportunity you had to get out of jail and get counsel was external support. And no one really knew where the money went.
Oh, it went to John Pierce and... to Lynn's ego. or when.
But Kyle, I'm just sensing this, and you could correct me if I'm wrong. You're calm, cool, and collected until this topic.
It just, two things in this world piss me off the most. When Lunchbox says I'm not a student at ASU, and when Linwood likes to go off and say that I'm being handled, it's disturbing.
Do you know what those two things have in common, though?
They're both lies.
Well, they're lies, but you earned both those things,
though. Exactly.
You earned your way into ASU, and
people have got to know that. He dropped out in the 10th grade. He finished two years of schoolwork to graduate when? This summer.
Yeah, over the summer.
Because your family needed help.
Yep.
And then you got into ASU, and you earned your win. You should be proud of that. And then also you have someone saying that you need to be handled. You're like, actually, I can handle myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And he does. I mean, he makes his own decisions.
Yes.
But I just want to say, so thank you to everybody who donated to any medium, who donated to Fight Back, who donated to FreeCalUSA.org, who donated to Give, Send, Go. Thank you to the millions. I'm not kidding. The millions of Americans and people throughout the world that wanted to support him. I mean, letters and prayers and the financial assistance was critical. But the reality is his former attorneys have some explaining to do, period. Well,
before we go off the topic, let's make sure we state clearly, because I know people listening might have heard a lot of different names, what is the current official fundraiser for Kyle right now?
FreeCalUSA.org. So if you go to FreeCalUSA.org, that's going to be constantly changing with updates about what's happening with him, what's going sort of on with the family, things of that nature.
We'll start posting some puppy pics.
Now with Linwood trying to claw back money raised for him, I mean, there are security costs that go into his everyday life and his family's everyday life. Sort of moving forward, there's a lot of costs as it relates to potential future legal actions against some people who might have said some things. But there's also costs associated with just holding accountable both Lynn Wood and John Pierce, which are costs that need to be put up to defend him. So
there's $2 million.
$2 million.
That was a bond that's up for grabs right now. Is that correct?
On the day I'm standing in front of a jury to learn my fate, this guy has the audacity to submit a motion in the court saying, this is our $2 million and we want it now, as I'm standing in front of a jury.
But it's even worse than that, right, Kyle? It was as soon as they announced a verdict was in.
But before.
So they had it all written, ready to go.
Yeah.
And as soon as they said the verdict is in, these guys filed a motion to allocate that bond to them. And let me just real quick. He has admitted he's been spending all the donations to pay for his personal legal bills and his security and stuff. So this is a man that hasn't provided any transparency to Wendy, to him, to their lawyers, except for a...
After asking for a year,
except for a spreadsheet that he posts online and says, I'm the hero. So, yes, that $2 million will be dealt with through the courts. It's not going to be dealt with on Telegram. And it's... The evidence matters, right? So...
And real quick, just to throw out for, the audience, this actually is the bail reform kind of issue that people always talk about, not necessarily for you because you didn't get, thrown $1,000 like this guy in Waukesha. This was $2 million. So the whole idea behind the bail system is that you're putting up the money as collateral for you to be able to be released, because you then showing up in court and participating in your trial, that becomes your incentive, your financial incentive for participating in the trial, is that you get your money back.
And it's a cash bail. Tell them about the cash bail
system.
So
it is a cash bail system.
You have to pay all of it.
It's $2 million, unlike Illinois, how we're used to, it's the 20%.
Yeah, that's
yeah, some states it's like 10. Yeah. Well, or you could use like bail bonds. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's none of that in Wisconsin.
Oh, so really? Okay.
And
you got to pay the full amount.
My motive for going to trial or going to court wasn't the $2 million.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's the, explain the system.
Yeah. But That it's to ensure your appearance in court. My insurance.
So paying the legal bills from December, the company created to be the financial entity to help Wendy because she had to raise her own money, was always in the red, right? I mean, his lawyers carried some significant costs because it started at zero and there was really no news going on about this whole thing, which was intentional, but still, so started in the red. And because of all the Americans and everybody who watches you guys and who supports him and the right of self-defense, we've been able to catch up significantly.
We should probably also mention Facebook was banning anyone who posted positively. If you posted, say, you know, I think Kyle Rittenhouse didn't do anything wrong, and here's a link to if you want to support him, banned.
Just his name.
Yeah.
Just his name. And they called him a mass shooter. That came from old Markey himself, called him a mass shooter. And they actually had to come out and be honest because they got sued. They had to say that he had no affiliation with any of these groups. He never visited any of the pages. Yet in the same breath, they still call him a mass shooter, right? It's shameful. Shameful what Facebook did.
And thank you to the millions of people around the country, not just the U.S., who have donated and supported us throughout this entire battle. It truly means a lot to me and my family.
The world. I mean, there was people who were donating from all countries across the world who saw.
I got so many postcards and letters from, like, Germany, Poland, from everywhere.
You have multiple battles.
Yeah.
You're being taken advantage of from within. You have the media smearing is the worst thing ever.
And then I have a binger.
And then you got binger and lunchbox. And you've won all of them.
Pretty much, yeah.
Last thing. You mentioned this briefly in your conversation with Tucker. I believe the Lord has his hand on you. Talk about that.
I believe God has been with me from the beginning. I pray every night. I believe he's helped guide me in the right direction. He's helped bring people into my world, such as Dave, LT, Mark, Corey, Joellen, John's husband, who's just helped me throughout this. And he hasn't gave me the answers, but he's helped point me in the right direction.
Well, there'll be more details that come out eventually, but you were very close to such bad intervention from forces that it would have been tough to recover from, just with the kind of group of people you were kind of chatting about.
And so, and I think we have to just put this out. Look, he's not sponsored by Under Armour. He's never talked to them. Right?
Right. So, yeah, Under Armour is going to release
their big statement. You actually have to do that statement. This day and age.
I'm happy to give you tons of Turning Point swag.
I can ask a quick question. This is something that my wife had asked me to ask. But how's your family doing with all this?
We're hanging in there. Huge weight off of our shoulder.
Like, you had a good Thanksgiving?
Of course.
We had a great Thanksgiving.
Awesome.
We had some turkey. My favorite is green bean casserole.
But Kyle, you at a young age, you were called into something that is unprecedented. And you're a smart kid. You got a lot ahead of you.
Thank you very much, Charlie.
And so freekyleusa.org, is that right?
Freekyleusa.org, yes, sir.
Any closing thoughts, Jack?
Look, Dave, one of the times that you called me, I remember I said this, and I've said it to a lot of people that, you know, I'm Catholic. That's the way I look at it. I think God had his hand on you that night. I really do. And I think you put a lot of people in that situation, and they might not have made it out of there without that kind of support. And so whether, you know, you're out there and you're someone who believes in something as literal as a guardian angel or just having that intervention come in, whatever the mechanism is, that's the one thing I always see when I watch those videos. And then when I saw what happened in that court. So not only was he there in the street, he was there in that courthouse and he was there in that jury room.
Someone was definitely watching over me that night. Thank you guys so much for having me on. It really means
God bless you guys.
Thank you guys for the honest journalism.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Great. Thank you. You bet.